cow corning. I don't know what to do about that. However, let's go on to the main thing. I had methyl silicone, okay? What good is it if you make it from magnesium? Who makes magnesium? Corn. This is the Dow Chemical Company. The monopoly, magnesium. Kaiser made magnesium during the war, but gave it up afterward. You know about this. I guess you probably read this thing.
So I've looked through.
You looked through it,
yes.
Yeah, so I had a substance, methyl silicone. I had a composition of matter patent on it. I had copolymers, methyl phenyl silicone, which I thought was pretty good stuff, and so on. String of patent applications, five and all. Patno collaborated on one with me. Okay, Corning Glass didn't like this at all, and so they filed interference suits on the five original patents that GE put in. I had to drop everything in the laboratory, go to Boston, work with a old Boston firm of Fish, Richardson and Neve on the interferences, and then, of course, endless depositions. I had to be there, travel with the lawyers when they went for their interviews, their depositions, go over all the transcripts of the testimony and proofread and so on. I ended up with a stack of books that high, proceedings of all the interference things, all the procedures they went through. Sent it into the patent office, and Dow Corning contested every one of these. They lost every one of those interferences. They didn't have a case. They had enough of a case to clobber me forever after with that acknowledgement that Coolidge wrote and insisted I put in my first paper, but there was no conflict of priority there at all, and there still isn't to this day. So I had methyl silicone. What good is it unless you can make it cheaply? And you've got to avoid Marshall. Damn it. He said, well, you got methyl silicone, so what? Use magnesium. They can always undercut us because they can charge us more for the magnesium than they charge themselves. Very logical, yeah. So it was up to me to find an alternative method of making it, and that occupied me for 2 years or more. I tried everything I could think of, dozens, nay, hundreds of flasks and bottles with the results of all the experiments. I could not make it by any organic method or combination of methods, nothing. Oh, I won't go into all the things that I did. It's all in my notebooks anyway.
But you were being supported in doing this by
Louis Navius.
He was still supporting you through all of this and giving you the time and
well, until the patent application went in and the first paper was submitted. And then Navia said, well, see here, you want to go on with this, don't you? Yes. Well, he went to Marshall and said, look, this is not ceramics. Why is it in the ceramic department? You give Rockow a shop order to go on with this. And Marshall said, well, we didn't develop this. Not invented here. He said, I don't think there's any future there because you can't compete with Dow, and then by that time Dow Corning. He said, look, they took their process to DuPont, and in order to ship the chemical part out of Corning Glass Works, DuPont considered it and turned it down. You know, they said, we have projects of our own. We don't want to take up a new thing like this. We don't know the future. There's no market for it. Hey, there's never a market for a new thing anywhere. They turned it down, and the other people they went to turned it down. So Marshall said, look, you can't compete with DuPont on a chemical project. Do you believe this? An idea arises in one person's mind, in one brain. There's no such thing as a joint invention. You can have contributors, maybe the patent examiner will allow it. Anyway, I had an idea, and it was proven, and I was stubborn enough not to give it up. So I went back and consulted Alfred Stock. He had made the hydrides. Well, I look at did the diagrams for his book. I have a book there, Hydrides of Boron and Silicon. So, how did he make the hydrides of silicon? Well, he went through a laborious procedure with magnesium silicide and acid to get the gases off, but he also tried something else. He ran hydrogen chloride over ferrosilicon, got nothing with silicon tetrachloride. He tried it over an alloy of copper and silicon, and he got a useful but minor proportion of HSiCl3, silicochloroform it was called then. Fine, I said, to myself, I'll set up to make silicochloroform, and I'll put a little methyl chloride in with the hydrogen chloride, see whether I can sneak in some methyl groups while all this is going on. Nothing about the mechanism, it's all mysterious, but let's try it. Okay, so I went down to the GE so-called stock room, chemical stock room, which is just a junkyard of everything that anybody had ever ordered and discarded, all the bottles and boxes on the shelves, everything going right back to bottles of stuff made by Steinmetz and labeled in his handwriting.
Goodness.
I had one of those bottles myself I kept for many years in my office. Well, I found on the shelf, along with the other alloys, general heading alloys, a canvas bag, and it was labeled copper silicon alloy, 50% copper silicon alloy. And I opened it up, and inside was a solid. But gee, it broke apart in my fingers, actually. It was very friable. But it said 50% copper. Okay. I took it out and put it in a glass tube and passed hydrogen chloride over it. And yes, I got SiHCl3, and I put in a minor amount, say about 10% by gas volume of methyl chloride with the hydrogen chloride. Let the stuff that came out evaporate, get rid of the excess. Well, it condenses in the cold trap. And then hydrolyze it in a mixture of ice and ether. Well, the silicon tetrachloride and the SiHCl3 hydrolyze, of course, they give white solids, siloxanes, inorganic stuff. the ether layer separated and dried and then evaporated, left a residue. Must be methyl groups on there. I had developed a way, an easy test. Well, I developed a method of analysis. I do that too, but using a platinum boat and a silica glass, fused silica tube, and combustion analysis. Maybe it's all in the book there. There's an easy test you can conduct on any substance you suspect of being a silicone. You put it in a sliver of it in a Bunsen flame, or even touch it with a match. If it's a silicone, it will burn with a very low flame, and it will give a white smoke. Any organic polymer will give you a black smoke. If you want to be permanent about it, put a watch glass above the smoke. If it's black, it's carbonaceous, it's organic. If it's white, it's a methyl silicone, has no carbon-carbon bonds in it. Very tiny blue flame, because there's enough carbon and hydrogen there, but it burns to a white smoke. Showed this to chemistry one student again and again and again. Yeah, showed us to talk, given it, I gave it Edison College over here just 3 weeks ago. Should I do it for you? You see the point. Do you want to?
No, that's okay. If we have time, I would like to.
Yeah. Well, I've got a sample here. I take a pair of scissors, cut a piece of silicone rubber, and touch a match to it. Okay. So I knew this was an organosilicon compound. It could only be a methyl silicone compound. It must be methyl silicone. Fine. So I cut down the amount of HCl and raised the amount, the proportion of methyl chloride. Went through the whole procedure again and again. Finally got up nerve enough to put in methyl chloride alone, hydrolyzed it, got a sticky syrup after evaporating the ether layer. I put that in an oven and it hardened. There's a layer in the bottom of a beaker of a syrupy stuff. I went racing down to the fifth floor to Pat Note. He had just come back from a trip. I said, look, methyl silicone that has never seen magnesium, what do you think of that? He said, how in the world did you make that? So I told him. And he said, well, that's the old intermetallic couple. Yeah, I make zinc diethyl that way from a zinc copper alloy, is it? Anyway, yeah, it's an application of electrochemistry to organic synthesis. Well, I never thought of it that way. I just followed what Stock said and then I worked at it till I got this. Yeah, Pat Note had been away on a trip, a long trip. He didn't. Well, that's great. He said, can you do it again? Well, sure, I'll do it again. So next day I went down and said, look, I made this after talking to you yesterday. The same thing. It's methyl silicone, all right. Hey, he said, is it all in your notebook? Yes. Is it written? Yeah. Can you do it 10 times in a row? I went back to the lab and I did it 10 times in a row, witnessed by my lab partner, another Cornell inorganic chemist brought in to assist with, assist with the magnesium oxide work. But yeah, it was all properly witnessed in the notebook and everything. Yes, and do it 10 times in a row. Aha, said Pat Note. You've got something there. I want to talk to Marshall about it. I'd like to set up a little pilot plant, make enough of it so we can put it in the electric machinery, some motors, some transformers especially, just to see what it'll do. So, okay, he set up, I guess he had argued that with Marshall. Marshall had to agree. It bypassed the whole magnesium argument, and no reasons why Pat Note shouldn't do it. Grudgingly, go ahead and finish your pilot plant. He did, and gee, it all developed from there. We soon used up that 5-pound sample of copper silicon alloy found in the old chemical stock room. Pat Note said no problem, or the equivalent in those days, no problem. I know the fellows over in the foundry. I'll get them to make up 100 pounds of copper silicon alloy. So they made up the copper silicon alloy, first 25 pounds of it, sent it over, a massive metallic looking alloy, of course. Hard to break up. They smashed it up and put packed lumps of it in a glass tube, and I ran methyl chloride over it, and nothing. Pat Note had set up his pilot plant. He called it, which was a 2-inch copper pipe, 6 feet long, with all wound to heat it, and all the automatic controls for the temperature recorder on there, and all the fancy things. He put it in his copper pipe, ran methyl chloride in for a couple days. No methyl silicone. He told the patent people, look, hold up the patent application on this. It doesn't work with our copper silicon alloy. Oh, they said this happens quite often. It's called losing the art. Boy, we lost the art. So Pat Note, what can we do? Well, the other stuff was aged for I don't know how many years, at least 20 years. We have to age this for 20 years. Well, let's accelerate the aging. We put it in a tube and ran air over it. Then we ran oxygen over it. And sure enough, it began to disintegrate by intergranular oxidation. So we put some of the disintegrated stuff in. Yes, it worked. Well, said Pat, we can improve on that. We ought to be able to make it out of a mixture of copper and silicon powders, be in close contact, almost as good as the alloy where the intermetallic compounds crystallize out. Novius watched this and he said there's still a better method. The way we make ceramic samples, you mix the powders and I'll put them in a pill machine under high pressure. That'll squeeze them together. Maybe some of the copper will wipe off on the silicon grains too. So he did that. Yes, that's very much better. We pressed pellets by the hundreds, by the thousands, loaded them in Pat Note's thing, and sure, they made methyl silicone. So patent application on that with Pat Note. Well, what's the next step? We write a paper about it. Wrote a paper about it. Sent it in. Now, how did Corning get their hands on that? Oh, through the what I would call the rank stupidity of management level in big corporations. They had they learned about it in some other way.
Was it the Gibson Island meeting?
Say that may be it. I went around giving talks, and I told about this method at a Gibson Island conference. See, you remember much better than I do.
Well, I only remember it because Warwick mentions it in his book, and that's the only reason.
I actually took along a little glass tube and a lecture bottle of methyl chloride, and I set it up, and I ran that in front of them. They get hydrolyzed, what comes out, or better still, take a piece of filter paper, hold it at the exit when the gases come out, show that it's water repellent. Pat Nowot had discovered this water repellency thing, and he pressed that to on completion too with patents on it. Yes, they learned about it there, went back, and there was uproar in Corning, Dow Corning Corporation.
So I think that was Barry.
Art Barry.
That picked it up at that meeting.
Yeah. So they took it up in a, well, they wanted to immediately to get patent rights on this thing. What was our patent situation and so on. And meanwhile, Pat Nowot's thing had come along. Anyway, it all developed until Marshall said, well, there ought to be a chemical division of the General Electric Company now, and I should be the vice president to head it. Well, they finally decided, after long discussion of the engineers and the board of directors and dozens of vice presidents, they should have a chemical division. And who should head it? Hey, they didn't choose Marshall. They said, we have a good man out in Cleveland at the GE Lamp Works in Cleveland, a metallurgist by the name of Zay Jeffries. Look, this involves an alloy, doesn't it? Yes. Involves the metals, yes. Jeffries is the man. They brought him in and gave him this title and installed him as the head of chemical division. Had no plant, no laboratory, no personnel. First thing he did was ask, well, what's the Dow Corning situation on this? Well, they said they like to get their hands on it. If it just would provide methyl silicon trichloride, methyl trichlorosilane, they'd be very delighted with it, because they could then add the phenyl groups by Grignard reaction and save them the first half of a much more troublesome step of getting the methyl groups on there. If they could get that, they'd go on from there. So Zay Jeffries came up with a brilliant idea. He said, we don't know what they have up their sleeves. They know what we have. They keep their stuff secret. We don't know. I'll draw up a patent exchange agreement with them whereby they can have a royalty-free license to every one of our patent applications in the area of organosilicon compounds in exchange for royalty-free license. Every application of theirs that comes up. He did that. Marshall agreed to it. It still raises my hackles. A man could go and sell his hard-working chemist down the river by offering to give up free the work of the results of years of work, and for no reason. That is no good sound reason. I said, I don't know what care what they have coming along. This is something that we have not only come along but proven. A proven concept. We should press it. I got nowhere with Marshall. Navia said, not in my department, I'll have to wash my hands of it. Go see Coolidge. Well, by that time it was Guy Suits, maybe, you know, it was Coolidge. I went to see him and he said, look, you talk to Zay Jeffries about it. That's his department now, and that's his brainchild. So I got an appointment at last, went to see the great man, and I told him my tale of woe. In effect, he said, there, there, little boy. We know best what's good for the General Electric Company. You have no experience in management or business. In other words, you don't know what you're talking about. We'll take care of all the ramifications of this thing. He just dismissed me out of hand. Mm-hmm. Who's the largest manufacturer of silicones today?
Dow Corning,
worldwide. What's the product that out masses everything else by more than 99-1? It's methyl silicone. How do they make their methyl silicone? Every little snitch of it is made by the Rockow direct synthesis. How did they get it? They got it for nothing, because the deal that Zay Jeffries made.